Grace, mercy, and peace be with all of you here this day from our triune God. Amen. Well, let's face it. We live in a first-come, first-serve kind of culture. And so who of us haven't maybe stood in line or paid a little extra for a first-come, first-serve something? Now, that something may have been the latest iPhone to come out, or season football tickets, or maybe a special music concert. And we are now willing to even pay a little extra for a front-of-the-line upgrade at amusement parks like Cedar Point and Six Flags, which allow us then to skip past all of those losers who were only willing to pay the regular price for their tickets. And who doesn't want the best seat in the house? Why shouldn't we want to have the best for ourselves and for our family? But the problem you see with this is that all of these best seats often come with a hidden price tag attached to them. For example, you don't get invited to Skybox seats unless you have something that your host expects from you back in return, whether it's maybe something financially or politically or socially. Or to score those best concert seats, you have to maybe be on the right list and maybe even have been a longtime subscriber or a donor to the theater that's hosting it. And as we have all heard, girls who wear glasses don't get backstage passes. So it would seem that the rule of this world is that there is no such thing out there as a free lunch. But here in this morning's gospel reading from Luke, free lunch is exactly what Jesus is daring his disciples to offer to others. And not only a free meal, but a free meal with valet parking and the best seats in the house. Now, the opening verse that we have here in today's gospel reading exposes a friction and a face-off between Jesus and one of the well-known factions of his own religious community. Jesus is invited to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath. Of course, this is that very same group of folks who were within the recognized and the respected strata of religious authority and who had been the most opposed to Jesus' message. So not surprisingly, the opening verse concludes here with the words, "They were watching him closely." Remember, Jesus was already on the outs with some of the Pharisees for performing work in the form of healings on the Sabbath. And Jesus was also on the suspect list among the Pharisees for his seemingly violating the letter of Torah law in terms of flaunting certain dietary restrictions and befriending those considered morally or physically unclean. And so with this with such an entrenched animosity against him, it is with this unspoken, it's with an unspoken high price now that Jesus accepts here this invitation to a Sabbath dinner at the home of one of these Pharisaic leaders. But Jesus here refuses to pay the piper. So instead of kowtowing to the traditional pecking order of first century, and we might also say 21st century standing, Jesus challenges his host to set the bar now higher. Luke's text doesn't tell us where Jesus' place was in this pre-planned seating arrangement of his host at that banquet table. We don't know if it had been if Jesus had been escorted to the first place at the reclining couch to sit at the right hand of the host, or perhaps he was way down at the other end of the table at the cheap seats, or maybe he was just somewhere in the middle like many of us. Anyway, whether Jesus was seated, wherever Jesus was seated, he had here this clear view of what was going on at this meal. And wherever Jesus was seated, his voice as well still carried over that banquet table, and its challenging message carried itself into the ears of those attending. Don't seek after the best seats, but graciously take the cheap seats, and then wait for the judgment of your host for your final seat at the banquet. In other words, Jesus was saying, don't choose your seat according to getting along, or getting ahead, or getting big, or getting what you think you should get, or getting to the top. Instead, choose your seats according to giving, the giving of grace and that giving of goodness that God intends for all human beings. I recently read an article about how some funeral homes are now trying to reinvent and rebrand themselves as being called instead celebration centers, where you can hold either a wedding or a funeral at their location. So no more pews or worship spaces, since both now seem to make people think too much of church, which allegedly conveys such a negative emotion these days that people are looking for ways to try to avoid them. So instead, they are now offering these reception halls or these family centers. And unlike our ancestors, people today are not willing to spend the big bucks on a traditional funeral. But they will shell out for a celebration center where there can be this video memorial along with a prime rib dinner and a champagne fountain and even dancing. Of course, many of these new celebration centers are designed less to honor the deceased and more to showcase the living. Now, I have to admit that I truly struggle with this whole kind of mentality. Back when I was growing up, it seemed that the highest honor that you could often show to someone, to a friend or a neighbor or a relative, or even, we might say, a lifetime enemy, was to at least attend his or her funeral. And that was because it was that one moment in your life when you couldn't expect to get anything back from that person in return. And perhaps even more of an honorable gift was to offer the eulogy, a final good word of respect, a request for shalom. This final homage was not considered to be then a social feather in the cap of the person who was the mourner. It was one final attendance at that heavenly banquet. And everyone attending knew that it could never be repaid. To attend someone's funeral was an act that could not be reciprocated by the one who had just died. It was an outstretched hand that could never be repaid. It was an offer of love and respect that could never be returned. It was a pure and simple gift without worldly expectations of gratitude or pay me back. There was no pay it forward at a funeral service. There was only pass it on. So this past week I heard a story that I loved about this woman who had died and no one was planning to attend her funeral service. So without pallbearers, you might ask yourself, how do you even get a casket into the ground? But the daughter of her rabbi put out a call on Facebook, and 30 strangers ended up showing up in order to carry this woman's casket and to pay their respects to this person who they had never met. This is pass it on. This is ultimate hospitality. So who are you willing to offer a final gift of love, of commitment, of prayer, and perhaps even more? That person may be the one at the end of your table. He or she may never, ever be able to repay you in any way whatsoever. So what kind of ultimate hospitality will you offer as your sacrificial act of Jesus' love for another? Now, Jesus calls all of his disciples here this morning, and that means you, to be friends of the impoverished, foes of the imperial, and forebearers of the imperfect. Maybe we should refocus the last in the Last Supper and see it not so much chronologically as maybe demographically. The Last Supper was Jesus' model for a supper where the last would be first. And Jesus also taught us how we'll fare at the Last Judgment and how that will depend upon who and where our seatmates are at the Last Supper. Amen.